At the retreat last month, I gave a talk, and I was juxtaposing the Zen teaching, or at least teaching as I understand it, with the writings of James Baldwin. And that was a really interesting exercise for me. And so today, in the same way, I want to consider something from Jacob Needleman, and how some of what he wrote sort of compares with some Zen teaching in a particular, on a particular topic. So Jacob Needleman was a scholar of philosophy and religion. He passed on in 2022. And among other things, he wrote a book. He wrote many books, but one of his books was entitled The Wisdom of Love. This book was given to me a few weeks ago by a good friend of mine, and it presents Mr. Needleman's views on the meaning of love in couples, and it includes a chapter on trust. So I've been reading this book, and this chapter on trust really sort of interested me and intrigued me. So today I'll be talking about trust. Now, this talk is, I consider it a work in progress. if there is anything such as the last word, this is not it. So that's just a caveat in the beginning. So in our Zen tradition, great faith or great trust is identified as one of the three essential qualities of a Zen practitioner. The other two being great question or great doubt, and great determination or great courage. So we have great trust. So what does this mean? What does this mean? And what is trust exactly? So a couple of thoughts about trust. Can it be, or is it an absolute? An all or nothing? You know, we trust or something or someone, or we don't. Or is it experienced in degrees? In what or in whom do we have faith or trust? Is there anyone we can truly trust, no matter what might arise? And I made a note here that I'm excluding dogs from this discussion. How do we know we could trust someone unless we were to test them? And what sort of test would we administer if we could? Have we always been completely trustworthy? What about people that are close to us or relatives and friends? You know, have they always been completely trustworthy? Have we never violated our own principles? Something that comes up for me is we know that there are contemporary Buddhist teachers who are known to have made repeated blunders of the sort that most people would consider serious violations of trust. You know, people that we're supposed to be able to trust, not always. So Jacob Needleman had something to say about trust in intimate partnerships in his book, The Wisdom of Love. Now, as I quote from his book, which I do several times here, I want to note that he uses the term wisdom as if it were one thing. But for him, it is, to use this term, he's distilling it. He uses it as a distillation of wisdom traditions, as if they were all one teaching. So here he is, first of all. Wisdom tells us that in the end, there is nothing to trust but God. Not God as external projections of our anxieties and dreams, but the actual reality above and within ourselves. Wisdom has always taught that everything else is ephemeral, not to be trusted beyond a certain point. So I thought that was quite interesting. So beyond a certain point, I think that's a really important phrase. We can trust ourselves and our friends and our relations up to a point. But we know without saying so, or we can consider without, that to go beyond certain limits of behavior, we can't expect unconditional love and support from those who are dear to us, you know, to come our way. You know, we have to behave. And so do other people. If we're to share space within what we might call a relative bubble of trust. This is not to say that we shouldn't trust. But rather that trust might not be an absolute thing. It is a relative thing. that we share and work on together and maintain. And, you know, we don't always behave perfectly, or at least most of us don't. Here's Mr. Needleman, quote, "Wisdom teaches us that we cannot expect of an ordinary person what is only a property of an inwardly developed human being. We err in expecting the other to be steadfast or whole in a way that we know, in our sincere moments, we ourselves can never be. We seem to expect of the other what we ourselves could not give." He goes on to say that human trustworthiness rarely depends on what he calls sustained self-mastery, and more commonly takes the form of obedience to rules. You know, we behave. We have, there are rules of conduct that we follow. There are norms. And to step outside of those is to step outside of this relative experience of trust. So he says this takes the form of obedience to rules. And here, I think, we can see a reflection of our own teachings on precepts. You know, the teaching is, you know, unless we're really clear, unless we have what Mr. Needleman might call sustained self-mastery, or we are, quote, an inwardly developed human being, unquote, then we should obey our precepts, our rules for conducting ourselves. Now, I'd like, at this point, to take a step to the side for just a second and say something about this idea of achieving what he calls sustained self-mastery, which we might consider to be a substitute phrase for our idea of once and for all enlightenment. I believe such a state, you know, a sustained state like this, whether we're talking about ourselves or about others or about teachers, exists mostly in our imagination. And also that because it includes the idea of a self, you know, I or you are awake, enlightened, have sustained self-mastery. Because it includes this idea of a self, it exists only in this all-or-nothing relative realm, the realm of opposites thinking. So I think it's best to let go of any notion that we might harbor that we or others, as separate beings, will attain such a state in a permanent way. Mr. Needleman writes that, quote, "We are dreaming dangerous dreams if we imagine that the other person is some kind of saint." So yes, we can have experiences of insight or enlightenment, but most of us don't become saints, and even saints are likely to be fallible. To underscore this, I remember something that Zen Master Jibong said, that Zen Master Sung San said. Zen Master Sung San said, apparently, even a Zen master is just one banana peel away from falling on their ass. So rather than being disappointed at this point in letting go of an idea of a once and for all self-perfection, I think we can feel some relief about it. We can direct ourselves toward trying to think and do right, but not burden ourselves by grasping at trying to be right, or burdening others by thinking that they represent rightness, or some kind of once and for all clarity. So that's my little step to the side. Back to trust. In terms of Zen practice, when we refer to great trust, what are we talking about? As I noted before, Mr. Needleman wrote that we are to trust only in what he calls the ultimate. He uses that term, ultimate, in God. In terms of trusting in another, and in this regard, Mr. Needleman is writing about an intimate other, a life partner. He says that, and I quote, "We can trust the lawful nature of the human search for the self." So this search for being awake is in what we can trust. We can trust that in the other, that we are all on this path. He writes that partners, quote, "can greatly help each other feel that this search is more to be trusted than anything else in life, and that without this search and the moments of reality it brings, all the other goods of life will sooner or later turn bitter or empty." Unquote. And then he says this, "It is the teaching of wisdom, and it is what we discover for ourselves. The world we know cannot offer us real love, safety, well-being, bond of true loyalty, peace, If it were otherwise, why would we search? And then this. We can trust the inner struggle in each other. That is to say, we can trust the laws and forces that come into play in human life when there is an inner struggle for truth about ourselves. So in short, he's saying that we are all searching for truth and that we can trust this in ourselves and in others. And this reminds me of something else. I would add that, we're all doing the best we can, even when we make mistakes, even when we violate our principles. So this reminds me of something. In the previous iteration of this very Sangha, long ago, there was someone in this community, and there was sort of an awkward situation with someone in the community, and this wise person spoke up and told some of us, nobody's a turkey because they want to be. we're all doing the best we can. So Mr. Needleman's view that we're all searchers for self merges, I think, beautifully with some of the language of our own Zen tradition. In our temporal rules, we are instructed to let go of our small selves and become our true selves. In our practice, then, when we speak of great trust, we can trust in the truth to which Buddhism points, to our true nature that is not a separate self, but rather the ocean of being, of oneness. I'm reminded here of, here at Blue Heron, when we say the first of our four great vows. We no longer vow to save all beings. We let go of that sort of opposite language, but rather to awaken as one. If we were printing money, we could write, in one we trust. Mr. Needleman's teachings about two people in an intimate relationship helping each other and trusting each other search for self also points directly to Sangha. So for me, I will admit, there's always been in my mind sort of a rather solitary aspect to my practice. But last month, our Sangha member, Robert Labuda, reminded us that Buddha told his disciple, Ananda, that spiritual friendship is not half of spiritual life, but the entirety of spiritual life. I'm reminded of a metaphor for this that was provided by Zen Master Sung San. He said, and I didn't hear him say it, but I heard it more than once, that in Korea, the way they clean potatoes is to put them all in a bucket and fill it with water and then stir the bucket. So the potatoes in this situation rub up against each other and gradually become clean. So this, of course, does not happen without some pain. Some of the potatoes get bruised, but we need each other in order for this to happen. So song is very important. And trusting in the process that Sangha offers us is important. When we identify as a separate self, we reside in opposites in which there's no possibility for complete reconciliation and trust, only the wish for it. For shorthand, I try to remind myself to trust in, most of all, in, to pick a word, truth. Truth as it is, and not how I want it to be, or how I imagine it to be. In Mr. Needleman's work, this is what he says, the actual reality, above and within ourselves. And I think if we can trust in truth, then we can't be disappointed in how things actually are. So thank you for listening.